We'll be right back. have much, much more contributions. Let's see. So let me tell you about the series, okay? So you guys have one more opportunity after today to be part of the live version of this series, because we are on part three. Part three, woo, everybody say part three of the series. So the series is, that's right. The series is designed for entrepreneurs, business owners, and event professionals who want to launch, manage, and optimize virtual events with confidence. You're going to learn from industry experts, which is us, and gain actionable insights to discover proven strategies to create engaging and successful virtual experiences. Now, what all that means is that you will learn and gain the skill set that you need to produce an event that is amazing, not only for yourself, but for your clients. And then your clients are always twofold. It's going to be your vendors and sponsors, as well as your attendees, and then anything that happens on the back end of that. Then we're going to talk. So today we're going to talk about the strategies for launching and managing virtual events. Now, there's a lot of parts and a lot of moving things that happen during events. You have attendees who need assistance with technical issues like I did today. I had to call in the big dogs today. Phil Ducky had to come over here and get me right because, yeah, yesterday was just a crazy tech day. All right, then the whole point of doing this event is so that we can learn from Erica's vast experience of hosting hundreds of virtual events. And so today she's gonna kind of lead us through what those strategies look like, why launching and managing virtual events is important. And so what we'll get into is what makes a great virtual event launch, and how to overcome challenges, and how to attract the right audience. So those are like three very distinct things that are very important to know, but we're going to cover those three things today. And so that we don't belabor this thing and just keep people in suspense as far as like what Erica's bomb she's going to drop for us today. I'm going to jump right into the questions. Everybody ready?
Ready.
Okay, so later on we'll let everybody tell everybody who they are. Thomas, I'm still jealous of that lens because I want that look, honey. You look amazing. Okay, you look amazing. All right, so let's kind of like, instead of going over all the different topics, I'm gonna let Erica kind of like get into those in a minute. But my first question is, what is the very first step you take when planning a virtual event, Erica Bates?
My very first step is deciding on if I actually want to do it, if I actually want to go through it or not, because it's a lot of work, especially if you're still deciding. Like, if you know what's going on, you know what you want to get out of it, you know what you want to happen, you know what you want your attendees, your speakers, and sponsors to get out of it, that's a piece of cake. But if you're still deciding, that takes energy, and that honestly makes me tired. So I gotta really decide for myself if I actually want to go through with it. So that's my answer.
Hey, Thomas, what about you?
For what?
So, like, what's the very first step you want to take when you're planning a virtual event?
I got to see what the market is first, you know, so, and dialing that event for that specific market. As you know, I'm in a pretty niche market, so I want to make sure there's really a market there for what I'm planning to do.
Absolutely. All right. And Anna, what's your first thing?
My first step is actually deciding the topic and like who I'm going to do this event for. So it depends if I'm the one hosting the event or if it's a client that's hosting any event. So I like to look first of who are we going to serve and how are we going to serve them. And that's how I make the decision on, okay, let's host this event.
Okay. All right. Well, y'all know how I do my thing. So I just decide that I want to do it and do it. And I feel like if people want to show up, they're going to show up because I'm doing it really just because I want to just share that information because I feel that it's valuable. So I'm not more focused on my audience. I always build my audience intentionally and very focused. And if you were part of the series where I talked about that, you'll know. You know exactly what I'm saying. If you didn't see it, you need to go back and watch it because there was some really good content. But the fact is that I think there's see, for Thomas, his is about like being able to monetize properly, you know, because Thomas is a businessman all the way. He's like, I'm not doing it if it ain't paying me, and I love it, right? And then a lot of times when I do virtual events, it's because I'm trying to create some kind of change, right? So that's my goal. It's like I want to do something that's going to be impactful, even if it's only four people. Those four people are going to get something really great out of it. So I used to do a lot of events for other people, but then I decided I just like the more customized version. So next question, everybody ready? Okay, how do you define success for a virtual event, and what KPIs or goals matter to you most, Erica Bates?
I always got to throw at me.
Hey, because this is your job. This is your jam right here.
Understood. So what I want out of the event, first I'm going to start off with the platform. How many people can I have on this platform? So if I'm on Zoom meetings, if I can have 100 people, I want 100 people. If I'm using AirMeet, I think my max is like 1,000. If I can have the max of that platform, I want it. That's one of my KPIs. I think the conversion rates for the average conversion rate would be like, is it 1 or 3%?
Mm-hmm.
But I want 10 because I think that's a good even number. And it's a little greedy, but I want what I want.
Okay. All right, Anna, what you got for me?
Well, I don't define success with numbers like most of my colleagues do. I define success by the experience that my attendees and my speakers and my sponsors and my, if it's an in-person event, also my, my English is running out right now.
Almost running out.
My providers. it's like, where's my English? I define the way people feel. Those are my KPIs. If they had a good time, if they got the result and that my event promise actually was fulfilled, that my speakers feel happy and excited that they're participating and that they want to share, that my sponsors feel cared for. Those are my real KPIs. Like, and if we're talking numbers, I'm also greedy, Eric. I don't want 10. I want 20. I want 40%. What do you mean? 1%, what's that? But I don't like to focus on those numbers because for me, I learned when I was doing in-person events back in 2008, that what matters most is what people feel in the event, not that all the things that went wrong or all, like, they don't even know what went wrong because they don't know what they even know. So, like, one of my first events, like, seriously, the sparkling cider, like, I got wet in it when I opened it, okay? Nobody cared. Like, I was like, that's when I learned that, you know, it doesn't matter all the things that we have, because we're planners, we want all the things. It's so rigid, right? Especially when it comes to numbers and conversion rates. But if people didn't have a good time, if people keep talking about the event after the event has happened, for me, that's success. Like, I still have speakers praising my summer summit. My summer summit that we had 20% attendance rate in summer. And I'm like, that's what I want. I want them to be excited. And then money just comes by default. But those are my KPIs, you know, return on experience. Very nice. All right, Thomas, what you got?
Well, I'm kind of a metrics guy, so I stand opposed to add a little bit there. Is I like to see the numbers and, you know, the number of upsells, things like that. You know, my events I do and the shows I do are really to get people to upsell them into my consulting services and stuff. So the conversion rate is important. But, you know, and an odd to add a point too, is that the metrics don't always tell you everything. So, you know, my show has on YouTube has a number of viewers and, you know, subscribers and those things. But I went to an industry event last fall, and it really struck me is that a lot of people came up to me and they'd seen my show. That, you know, they hadn't necessarily even watched the episode, but the fact that my show was there, they knew who I was, they saw my posts on LinkedIn, they knew who I was, and they connected. So that's something the metrics can't really tell you. So it's the metrics are there and you can use them, but they don't always tell you everything. So you got to take it with a grain of salt and not get totally discouraged if your metrics aren't that great, because you can measure things in other ways that are a little, you know, more qualitative than quantitative, I guess.
Absolutely. Okay, so let's see. Okay, for me, my KPIs, y'all, this is going to sound so crazy, and it's going to sound a little bit ghetto, but my KPIs are always, just like Anna's, people who came, people who attended. I never worry about the people who didn't show up. It just means it wasn't for you. And that the people who actually make it to the room are, whether it's in person or not, because I'm not really, I don't know, I'm working on being better at wanting to be in person. That's never been my thing, you know. I'm always the person who's like, I'm so excited to do a thing. And I'm so sorry, y'all. I'm trying to manage these phones over here. I'm so excited to do a thing until it's time to do it, and I'm like, oh, I'm done. So that whole in-person thing. And then now, so for me to take the way that my people feel when they come to an event and be able to, I love swag, so I'm always looking for like really good swag. And so last year I was doing like this really big event, and my thing was to have the right people to be in the event so that they can interact with each other. Right. And then that was like the best part, because I didn't have to be, the being the center of attention wasn't my interest. My interest was having all the people there, like amp up. Like, people are still to this day talking about that event, just like you're Anna, and it's great. So it was an in-person event and all that kind of stuff. So what I'm always trying to learn better so I can do better. You know, and so the numbers aren't always important. So let's talk about in general. Now, you people out there who try to run these virtual events, don't do them for free. Yes, it is about the money. So don't even get it twisted, okay? Because you have to, it's a lot of work. And you have to pay the people who's going to be part of your event most of the time. So you have to do speaker wrangling, somebody has to be managing the chat, if you don't know how to do graphics, you have to have graphics, so you have to have speaker cards, like all these things. So it is about the money. So let's be clear, because people don't do stuff for free. Right. And then go ahead, Erica.
I just wanted to say, with Anna Andrea, it's not just her events. If you hang out with her, like I hung out with her and she helped me set up my chat bot. Mm-hmm. I had a good time. So I don't think it's just an event. I think it's actually her. And with your event, Elle, all my favorite in-person events are been when you hosted them. And every time I'm on any of Thomas' events, I learn something new. And I always know I'm going to get that new when I hang out with Thomas.
Yes.
So I think it's the host that has something to do with it. I just didn't throw that in there.
I agree. But I'm just saying, like, for the logistics of it all, right, you got to remember, we're talking about, we in this room, we know, right? But we also know that our fundamentals, we got them. And we know that when we put on an event, we're going to make some money, okay? It's just a given. But when you are new and you don't know how that works, I don't want you to take our advanced version of an event and miss the point that you are making an event so you can make money. Okay? It doesn't have to only be about the money. That doesn't have to be the main focus, but it has to be a focus because you need to get an ROI. Okay? So that is super important. And yes, we're talking about all the fluff and everything in the ether, but the facts are that you have to make sure that you have a plan. You have to make sure that you are, whether it's ticket sales or some selling products like Thomas, want to sell somebody, then upsell them to something else, that's really important. Because I want you to really get, everybody out there to really get that, yes, we are talking about doing all the things up here, but our fundamentals are there. So we have a plan on how we're going to either get people to go from one thing to the next, which is going to be paid, or they're going to come in and buy something at that event. Okay, so that is important. Can't skip that part. Okay, so you're ready?
Quick point is that some people talk about tripwire type things, which are low cost, you know, so you'll see people doing events for like $27. And you're not making any money, but you're getting them in there maybe to buy the recordings or to upsell them on things. So you get people to pay for a tripwire event or tripwire product, as it were, and then you get them into the funnel, basically, at that point. So, you know, that concept has been around for a while. It's not the newest thing, but that is so. But I like that idea better than the totally free events or the freemium events, because you're getting them to pay and it's offsetting your costs a little bit up front, and then you can upsell them from there. And, you know, so you can get a little bit of money from that, but you know, obviously the money to be made is in the upsells.
Absolutely. I totally agree with you, Thomas. But I just don't want people to think that we're doing events for free just because we like doing events. We like doing them. But we want to get paid, okay? Let's keep
it clear. Like to talk, right?
Yeah, we want to keep it clear. Yes, for sure. All right, so y'all ready to go to the next question? Okay?
Good.
Yeah? Okay. Third question. Have you ever had to pivot your event strategy mid-launch? What happened and what did you learn? Erica Bates.
Okay, so 2 years ago, I had an idea of being Black Friday ready and 90 days or less. I didn't want to do it. And I put it off. I set up a landing page. I set up an ebook. I set up pre-event countdowns. I had an email sequence. And I didn't want to do it. So I thought, I'd do it next year. And I looked over all the stuff I've made. I was like, I don't want to do it. So I didn't. But this year, I'm going to actually follow through because I've already had the stuff made. It just took me 2 years to say, maybe people actually want this. Maybe if I set this up, since I already had it set up, if I say it's going to go out in August, people will be actually ready for Black Friday. They will have their affiliate links. They'll know who, what SaaS or what service provider they want to promote for. And they could actually make some money with this. And I thought, this would actually be a good thing for Black Friday if you got ready for it in August. So, yeah, I'm actually going to follow through. It took me a minute, but, yeah, I think I'm ready to follow through.
All right. So,
that was a two-year pivot.
Hey, I think that, you know, it's better than not pivoting at all. All right, Thomas.
All right. If you do a live show and you got guests on, you got to be prepared to pivot because, you know, if you stay really structured, it may come across a little, you know, like very stilted and stuff. So, and you know, if somebody brings up something when you're interviewing them that's interesting, not just want to go down rabbit holes, but you want to follow that thing if it's interesting. And so you need to be prepared to open yourself up to change the questions a little bit and be flexible on that because you can really bring out some interesting things if you just didn't plan for or expect right up front. So yeah, live guests, you got to be prepared to pivot.
That's right, because Anna said something earlier, you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, Anna, your turn.
I've been thinking about this question for a while, but not mid-launch, but in this summit that I'm hosting at the end of the month of this month, April, I had to pivot because there was this speaker there's a few speakers that I had to replace, for different reasons. One, they couldn't do the promotional calendar. Another one had a lot of family situations and their own launch going on. Another one was like, oh, I spent $200,000 on building my email list. And I'm like, do you not know who my other speakers are? Like, what do you mean? You spent $200,000 on your email list and you can't promote. Okay. And then I had one, and this is, that's how we're launching right now. Day one, I should have 6 to 7 sessions every day. But on day one, we're only going to have 5 because I had this speaker that was super excited to participate and then ghosted me. I had to go, four messages on Messenger. He's a recommendation from another speaker. So, and he's a 2 award, whatever, winner, all the things. He was supposed to be the first speaker on the lineup. Okay, guys, like I was excited to have him. Yeah, and then I messaged him in Messenger like 4 or 5 times. I'm like, what is it? Is it me chasing a man down? I'm not doing that. So I asked the speaker that recommended him, like, hey, could you tell me, like, how do you communicate with this man? Because no email responses, no Messenger responses. And he's like, through school. And I'm like, okay. I went to her membership because I'm in her membership in school. I found him. I sent him a message. He replied, excited again, to ask me, where's the email, what's the email, and then ghosted again. So I was like, you know what? I'm done. Like, I'm not chasing no person, no speaker ever. Like, I don't care about hurting my cats. So that's how I call my speakers, my little cats, because they all have personalities of their own, and I have to cater to their stuff. Like, yesterday, I had a speaker calling me on Messenger, and I'm like, don't call me. What are you doing? But she wouldn't move a finger if I didn't call her back, so I called her back. But that's fine. Like, I don't mind catering to my speakers, but chasing them down, absolutely not. Like, I'm giving you a platform. I'm putting everything together. I'm giving you the opportunity to be showcased with other 7 multiple-figure speakers, and you were excited, and then you're ghosting me? No. So instead of having that speaker be the first one on the line, I put the speaker that recommended me. Now you're going to know when you find out the lineup. She's going to go first. And then at the end, what I'm going to do is I'm going to have a networking party for everybody. So I'm going to like open a Zoom room. I'm going to have everybody come join us. And if the speakers can come, great. If they can't come, whatever, we'll create some. I'm still figuring out what we're going to do, but I'm adding a live session instead of him just to like compensate a little, but that's how I pivoted.
Okay, that's very cool. I can't wait to hear more about this event. I'm like, okay, I'll be a speaker. Wait a minute, hold on. I might need to come. So, but for I think that events are designed for pivot.
Yeah.
You don't have a choice. You know, there's no such thing as everything's going to work out fine. Because just, okay, so today, I'm the host. I had technical issues. I could not hear you guys. Y'all couldn't hear me. I'm talking to Erica on the phone. I'm like, I'm coming. I'm trying. So it's like, and then, oh my gosh, don't talk about Erica's best friend who will never show up in time. I'll let her tell y'all who it is, but I'm like, no, I can't do it. So it's always a thing. So I think that events, I'm talking to the people out there in the audience, when you're going to produce an event, don't freak out when things don't go well. Erica tell you, I do not speak or wrangle at all. If I reach out to you and ask you if you're interested in being part of my event, and you say yes, and I give you a place where you go and you sign up and put all your information. If you don't put all your information by the time the deadline, you're out. I don't care. Like, it's not my issue. I'm not your mother. I'm not your babysitter. This is how it goes. It's business. It's not personal. You either get it done or you don't. And I'm fine with it. Because if I have to be the host and talk to the people the whole time, guess what? That's what's going to happen. They just going to be mad because they got to look at my face all day. But that's what's going to go down, you know, because it is what it is. So, yeah, Erica just laughs at me because I don't speak or wrangle. But I'm just like, look, you show up.
Not just that. In South Carolina, we got this thing called no call, no show. That means you quit. Sees them as they quit. Not only do you not get to be a part of that event, she will never call you again because she quit.
Yeah, you ain't going to put eggs on my face twice now. We're going to get that together. You know, because usually when I have an event, I try to have that. Everybody who comes to the room needs to have something to add to the room, you know, so I feel like that's how it should be. You know, regardless of whether you're attendee or on the platform, you're going to be in the room, so you need to have something to contribute. We don't want anybody who's just going to be a spot, you know, just be a bump on the dog's booty, as I always say. All right. Tyler, did you answer this question?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I thought so. Because you know, Thomas is very... I feel like Thomas is like very like the same, you know what I mean? Like he's like very even keel. It's like, this is how it goes and this is what happens. Yes, something crazy is going to go on and I got this. You know, and that's how you should be as a host. It's not, you know, Thomas has hosted a lot of events. I don't know how many, I would say at least a few hundred, if not more. And, you can't shake him, you know, and I feel like that comes with experience. And as a virtual event host, you really need, I don't think, I'm not going to say this. I hosted my first virtual event by myself. Would I do it again, knowing what I know now? No, I would have people help me like I do now, right? Because I feel like there's so many things, and people are like, Zoom is too much anymore, and I'm like, Zoom is not, I mean, your Zoom might be boring, but our Zoom is never boring.
Tell me that today.
Yeah, our Zoom is always rocking. There's always something going on. The one dude comes on sometimes, and he always doing something crazy. I mean, what's the Asian guy's name?
You talking about John?
John?
Yes. And you're like, come on, John. Yes. And like, it's crazy. And then, oh my God. So there's always stuff going on. So I feel like, you know, it's just like, this is no different than being on stage. And if you are a boring host on Zoom, you're going to be a boring host on stage. And I don't think I want to go to your event. So if you think that Zoom is boring, then you have a problem. It is not Zoom and it is not us. So get it right. Okay.
But let me quote my photography teacher. Okay. So he says, it is not your equipment. You use what you have. You use what you have well. You use what you have to the best of your abilities. You use what you have to the best of its abilities. It is never the equipment. It is always the operator.
That's right. Because you can see people, do like shoot a whole commercial or a movie on a freaking iPhone. I'm like, man, or you see how they, like, try to get you to take their class, and they're like, okay, so this, you do this setting, you take this picture, and then they take a picture of themselves, like, regular, like how I do, I'm always looking crazy on the thing, and then they have a picture, a selfie that they took with their expertise, you know, and I'm like, man, I need to have one. And that's great. And it's the same phone. So, yeah. I think that is absolutely correct. And we are ready for the next question. Okay, so question? I think we covered, huh?
May I ask a question? I like to know because, you know, I'm nosy. What is everyone's favorite platform for virtual events?
I don't care. I'll do any of them. Except your guy. Your friend, I don't like him.
You're talking about OneStream Live. So we are actually using OneStream Live right now. We're we're streaming live to at least 8 platforms.
Maybe.
I like events where I can hook up an RTMP. So that's real time. Yeah. I like RTMP. And if I can hook it up to something, I'm going to use it.
Okay, so sometimes you can have a platform that says that it will do something. And then you go,